Which brings us to the last case on the docket. Thank you, Mr. Rice. 5964, which is a proper spacing for the development of the Dickinson Lodgepole Pool in Stark County, redefine the limits of the field and enact such special field as necessary. All parties wishing to be heard in this case, please come forward.
May it please examiner Lawrence Bender, P.O. Box 400, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing in this matter, case number 5964, on behalf of Connick Wink. We'll have two witnesses.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Connick, raise the right hand. Do you promise to tell the truth in this hearing?
Yes.
Thank you.
As I indicated, Mr. Examiner, we'll have two witnesses in this proper spacing matter. Jim, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Jim Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
I am employed in a landman position by Conoco Inc., formerly located in Casper, Wyoming, now located at 10 Destra Drive, Midland, Texas.
Have you had an opportunity to testify before the North Dakota Industrial Commission as a landman and had your qualifications accepted as that of an expert?
Yes, I have.
In preparation for today's hearing, have you made a thorough study and review of the pertinent land matters that relate to this proper spacing matter?
Yes, I have.
Have you prepared or had prepared under your control and supervision certain exhibits that you intend to sponsor?
Yes, I have.
Satisfied yourself as to the accuracy of those exhibits?
Yes.
Offer the further testimony, this witness is that of an expert.
Motion granted.
Jim, let's turn first to what's been marked as exhibit number one. Can you identify that exhibit and briefly describe it?
Exhibit number one is a location map which outlines the Williston Basin in the shaded area across portions of three states. It also indicates by black star the approximate location of the Dickinson Field located in Stark County, North Dakota.
And this exhibit is identical to the exhibit that was presented at the unitization hearing, except Bismarck is spelled correctly.
Except we've correctly spelled Bismarck on the advice of our high-paid legal representation.
Let's go on to the next exhibit, exhibit two.
Exhibit number two is a plat indicating the outline of the Dickinson Lodgepole Field located in townships 139 and 140 north, ranges 96 and 97 west, Stark County, North Dakota. The Dickinson Field area is shaded in yellow. The Dickinson Lodgepole Unit, created by Commission Order 6861, is shaded in blue within the outline of the Dickinson Lodgepole Field.
And it's true, is it not, Jim, that there currently is no production in the Dickinson Lodgepole Pool outside the unit boundaries, is that correct?
That is correct.
The unitized formation boundary.
That is correct. Okay.
And does Conoco have plans for additional drilling in the Dickinson Lodgepole Pool?
We do have plans at some time in the future. We are continuing our research, and we do have plans for additional drilling in the Dickinson area.
That's all the questions I have for this witness.
Any questions?
You're recommending the field boundaries stay the same as they are now?
Yes, I am.
Next witness.
Kevin, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Kevin Zorn, spelled Z-O-R-N.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
Conoco Incorporated. I'm a petroleum engineer.
And in that capacity, have you had an opportunity to testify before the North Dakota Industrial Commission on previous occasions?
Yes, I have.
And have you had your qualifications accepted as that of an expert?
Yes.
And in preparation for today's hearing, have you made a thorough study and review of all the pertinent engineering matters concerning this proper spacing matter?
Yes, I have.
And have you prepared or had prepared under your control and supervision certain exhibits that you intend to sponsor?
Yes, that's correct.
Satisfied yourself as to the accuracy of those exhibits?
Yes.
Offer further testimony, this witness is that of an expert.
Motion granted.
Kevin, let's turn first to what's been marked as exhibit number three. Can you identify that exhibit and then briefly highlight it?
Exhibit number three is a type log, which is a dual induction log taken from the Dickinson State number 74, which was the discovery well for the lodge pole within the Dickinson Field, located in Section 32, Township 140 North, Range 96 West, Stark County, North Dakota. The black line at the top of the page, labeled top of clean lodge pole mound, marks the top of the productive interval within the state number 74, and it's characterized by the very clean gamma ray, which is the curve on the far left-hand side of the depth track. The perforation interval extends in this well from the top of the lodge pole down to 9850. The well was perforated in February of 1993 and produced an initial rate of approximately 2,000 barrels of oil per day. The two lines at the bottom of the page show the lower limits of the productive, or the lodge pole reservoir, I should say. The Bakken Shale is the bottom line, and the line above that is the top of an anomalous shale that's approximately 20 feet above the Bakken Shale, shown by the gamma ray, showing the big decrease at approximately 10,028 feet.
And Conoco is not recommending any change to the definition of the stratigraphic limits for the Dickinson Lodge Pole Pool, is it?
No, we are not.
Let's go on to the next exhibit.
Exhibit number 4 is a geologic structural cross-section across the Dickinson Lodge Pole unit. This is the same exhibit which was presented at the unitization hearing in June, case number 5933. Starting at the left-hand side of the page, the exhibit goes from the Frenzel number 79 straight hole, which was a dry hole drilled on the northeast edge of the reservoir. Then it goes to the east to the Dickinson State number 74, which is the same as the type log I just shown a minute ago. It was producing well. Then the cross section goes to the south to the Dickinson State number 83 in section 5. And the lodge pole goes back, or the cross section goes back to the west to the Walton number 84, which was a dry hole drilled on the southern edge of the field. What this cross section depicts is the geologic picture of the lodge pole reservoir, which we have defined as a Walsortian mound. It's a very clean limestone reservoir with very high permeability. It has very steep sides on the edges, and it's at its thickest point at the Dickinson State 74 has approximately 140 feet of reservoir and another 150 to 200 feet of water field reservoir.
Okay, let's go on to the next exhibit.
Exhibit number 5 is a structure map which was constructed for the unitization hearing, case number 5933 in June of 1994. And it shows Conoco's interpretation of the structure at the top of the lodge pole formation within the Dickinson Lodge Pole unit.
And this structure map basically depicts the reservoir limits of the unitized formation, is that correct?
That's correct. The map shows that the limits of the reservoir are approximately 753 acres of reservoir.
But you're not suggesting that the commission contract the field boundaries, are you?
No, we're not.
And that's because you plant plans for additional drilling, is that correct?
Yes, we do.
Let's go on to the next exhibit.
Exhibit number 6 is also an exhibit which is very similar to one which was in the original spacing hearing, and it lists the reservoir and fluid properties of the Dickinson Lodge Pole Reservoir. Starting at the top, the initial reservoir pressure was 4,536 PSI, measured at a subsea depth of 7271. This was taken from a pressure buildup test in the state number 74 shortly after its completion in 1993. The bubble point pressure of the oil has been measured at 1,465 PSIA, which was done on a PVT analysis conducted by Core Laboratories. Also on that analysis, we calculated the oil formation volume factor at original pressure of 1.356 reservoir barrels per stock tank barrel and 1.420 reservoir barrels per stock tank barrel at the bubble point pressure. The solution gas oil ratio was 468 standard cubic feet per stock tank barrel. The oil gravity at standard conditions is approximately 44 degrees API. Wall viscosity is .29 centipoise. The measured reservoir temperature is 224 degrees Fahrenheit. The average porosity within the Dickinson Lodgepole unit is 5.372%. The conate water saturation is 10.6% measured from special core analysis on the CADGEMIS number 75 in section 31. And the residual loss saturation to water is 50.5%. The permeability of this reservoir is extremely high and is one of the major characteristics of the Lodgepole reservoir. It ranges from 100 millidarcies to over 2,000 millidarcies. The reservoir drive mechanism is solution gas, and the currently discovered reservoir has an original oil in place volumetrically of 19.4 million barrels and a material balance original oil in place of 18.25 million barrels.
Kevin, is there anything special about the characteristics of the Lodgepole reservoir that require unitization in a relatively short period of time?
Yes, as I mentioned, the permeability of this reservoir is extremely high, and that is responsible for the very high producing rates experienced from the wells. Two of the four wells that Conoco drilled have capacity to produce in excess of 2,000 barrels of oil per day at initial conditions, and due to the high permeability, the reservoir pressure will fall very quickly because the aerial extent of these reservoirs is relatively small. In our case, in October of 1993, after the drilling of the third well, the field production peaked at about 3,000 barrels of oil per day. At that rate, the reservoir pressure was declining at 5 pounds per day. And at that rate of pressure depletion, you would reach the bubble point in a very short period of time, which would have fairly significant implications on the ultimate recovery of the field.
So what you're suggesting is that restricting the production of the field was very important to the ultimate unitization of this pool, is that correct?
Yes. Beginning in November of 1993, Conoco began voluntarily restricting production from the reservoir, starting at a rate of 1,500 barrels of oil per day in November, which was then further reduced in December of 1993 to a field rate of 300 barrels of oil per day. The 300 barrels of oil per day limit was kept in place until the reservoir study was completed and until we had several partner meetings to discuss the formation of a secondary recovery unit. We increased the rate in April of 1994 to a rate of 600 barrels of oil per day, and that production rate has been maintained up to the present time. At this time, Conoco plans to start water injection 1 week from today, and at that time the production rate will be increased to a rate of approximately 2,000 barrels of oil per day. Had we not reduced the oil rate as we did during late 93 and early 94, the reservoir pressure would have continued to decline, and it's very possible that we would have dropped below the bubble point prior to the installation of any water flood operations.
Kevin, from the date that you had your first working interest owners meeting and just started discussing unitization to the date you finally got an order from the commission unitizing the field, that was a relatively short period of time. How long was that?
Yes, we first contacted all our partners and had our first meeting in late November of 1993, and we had our unitization hearing, I think it was the second week of June of 1994, so in approximately 8 months we went from just barely wrapping up the development of the field all the way towards receiving regulatory approval to begin water injection. That was a very short period of time in my experience anyway.
And even though it was a very short period of time in your experience, Conoco still felt a need to restrict production, is that correct?
Yes. We felt that it was in the long-term interest of all interest owners in the field and the state of North Dakota for us to have this temporary period of restricted production so that we could realize the ultimate gain of maximizing oil production from the field.
In your opinion, if there had been no production restriction, what would have happened?
If we had not restricted production, the pressure would continue to have fallen. I mentioned that we peaked at a rate of 3,000 barrels of oil per day in October. We did drill a fourth producing well, which came online the second week of December. That well was capable of producing approximately 400 barrels of oil per day, and we never did produce all four wells in the field simultaneously. So we probably would have had a rate in the field approaching 3,500 barrels of oil per day in December of 1994. And because of the relatively small oil in place, in this reservoir, for every 600 barrels of oil we produce, we drop the reservoir pressure approximately one PSI. So at a rate of 3,500 barrels a day, you would be dropping the pressure at 6 pounds a day. And at that rate of depletion, it would not take very many months to fall below the bubble point pressure.
So in your opinion, the self-imposed production restrictions are going to be very instrumental in the ultimate success of your project?
Yes, that's correct.
Let's go on to the next exhibit, exhibit number 7.
Exhibit 7 is an incremental recovery curve which was presented at the unitization hearing in June. What's shown in the cross-hatched area is the amount of oil production which will be realized as a result of the secondary recovery. Starting at the top of the page, you can see that the oil rate would have peaked at approximately 35 to 3,600 barrels of oil per day, and because of the drop of reservoir pressure, would have depleted very quickly. The reason why the curve flattens out at approximately 2,000 barrels a day on the lower curve is that once the reservoir pressure hits approximately 2,400 PSI, the wells would have had to be put on artificial lift, and because of that, our ability to produce fluids would have been severely restricted. By injecting water, we ought to be able to maintain the oil rate at very high levels until we get water breakthrough, which we predict will happen approximately year 5 to 6, and at that point the production rate will start to decline. So because of the water flood operations, we expect to recover in excess of 2 million barrels of oil, which would not have been recovered had we not installed the water flood.
Let's go on to the next exhibit, Exhibit 8.
Exhibit 8 is basically a tabular presentation of the information which is shown on Exhibit 7. Conoco has predicted that the primary oil recovery of this field without any form of pressure maintenance would be 27.7% of the original oil in place, or approximately 5.4 million barrels of oil. Under water flooding, we expect to recover an incremental 12.8% of oil in place, for an ultimate recovery of 7.9 million barrels in the field. So this additional 12.8% of original oil in place would not have been recovered had there not been a secondary recovery unit.
Exhibit 9?
Exhibit 9 is an exhibit I prepared to try to give the commission a feel for the economics of an average lodgepole field. Conoco has spent about the last year and a half doing a very extensive reservoir engineering and geologic study of our holdings within the Dickinson field. And like most reservoirs, we expect that we're going to encounter a range of different field sizes, some very small, some very large, some in the middle. And so what we've done is a statistical analysis of what this range of potential field discoveries could be. And obviously in this analysis we've had to make some assumptions and some geologic and engineering interpretations, but I think this is representative of what an average lodgepole field would generate. I should also point out it's Conoco's opinion that the field that we have already unitized is going to be a large field for the lodgepole. We don't expect on average to be able to recover 8 million barrels of oil from a single accumulation. So I'll just kind of run through this.
Just to interrupt for a second, you talk about the current lodgepole pool, which is unitized now and it being large. Are you talking in terms of aerial extent or thickness? Or
talking in terms of oil in place. An oil in place of 20 million barrels of oil for this type of geologic setting, Conoco believes is going to be on the high end of the spectrum of what could be expected. Obviously there's some interpretation in there because there's only been one discovered, but based on our interpretation of the geologic setting where this reservoir has been discovered and comparing it with other basins where similar types of reservoirs have been discovered, we think that the current Dickinson Lodgepole unit, which has 4 producing wells, is going to be a large Walsortian mound. We think on average they're going to be much smaller than this. So I'll just run through what we believe would be the typical field characteristics of a lodgepole field within the Dickinson Field outline. We think that this field would have three wells drilled in it on average. Ultimately, there would be one producer and one injector and at least one dry hole. The reason why we have to drill three wells, I think what we all saw in the unitization hearing is that one of the critical factors in these things is acquiring enough geologic evidence so that you can define the limits of the reservoir. And I think on this typical field, probably three wellbores is going to be the minimum. The aerial extent of this reservoir would be approximately 354 acres with an average oil thickness of 37 feet, would have reserves of approximately 794,000 barrels of oil and 371 million cubic feet of gas, and an original oil in place of 3 million barrels of oil. In order to develop such a reservoir, Conoco estimates that the total exploration and development cost would be approximately $3.5 million. So based on these parameters, we ran economics on this typical case, and in these economics, we've assumed that the field will be curtailed at a rate of 200 barrels of oil per day for the first year. It also assumes that the field is unitized within 1 year of discovery, and we assume that the water flood will be initiated in the beginning of year two at a rate of 1,000 barrels of oil per day. So if you plug all those economic parameters, you end up with an economic result using a 100% working interest and a 1/8 royalty of a net present value of $2 million and a rate of return of 62%.
Kevin, it's Conoco's recommendation here today that the commission make the temporary spacing proper. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And the spacing this area on temporary spacing is one well to 320 acres. Is that
yes.
correct? Has Conoco analyzed the possibility of having a denser spacing or a larger spacing pattern than 320 acres?
Yes, we have. If you use the typical field characteristics as your basis, if you develop this typical field on 160-acre spacing instead of 320-acre spacing, that would result in the drilling of at least two additional wells and probably three, unless you had an unlikely situation where the entire reservoir fell on a single spacing unit. And you could also have the opposite end of the spectrum where the spacing unit fell on the four corners of four section lines. So if you drill another two to three wells, the cost of drilling a producing well is approximately $820,000. The cost of drilling a dry hole was approximately $400,000. So assuming we drill two more producing wells and one more dry hole, that is an incremental investment of over $2 million, or almost $2 million. So you can see the result, the economic result of developing this typical field on 160-acre spacing versus 320-acre spacing would be to eat up almost all of this $2 million net present value in additional drilling, and it would not result in the recovery of any additional oil reserves. So it's my opinion that developing a typical lodgepole field on 160-acre spacing will be uneconomic.
And it will be economic on 320 acres?
That's correct.
In your opinion, would one well drain effectively and efficiently 320 acres?
Yes, it will.
Let's go on to the next exhibit, exhibit number 10.
Exhibit number 10 is a proposed order for proper spacing, which has been patterned after the commission's temporary spacing order.
Maybe you could briefly highlight some of the differences that have been included in this order and why. And I believe they're redlined, is that correct?
Yeah, they're shown in a kind of a hatched shading. Because of the unique reservoir in the lodgepole, Conoco has recommended the inclusion of some additional provisions within the proper spacing order in order to provide for the proper development of future reservoirs. Starting on page one, finding number two just outlines the current lodgepole unit and recommends that it be excluded from the spacing order because it's now considered one lease. Finding number seven, I'll just read that briefly. The engineering evidence presented to the commission relative to the characteristics of productive lodgepole reservoirs in the Dickinson Field area indicates these reservoirs are undersaturated oil reservoirs with extremely high permeabilities. As a result, unrestricted production will result in a rapid decline in reservoir pressure. Without some form of pressure maintenance, reservoir pressures in a typical lodge pole reservoir will quickly fall below the bubble point, resulting in significant loss of oil reserves. We then go into the section labeled "It is therefore ordered" under finding number two. The Dickinson Lodge Pole Field is defined as all lands within the Dickinson Field boundary, excluding tracts located within the Dickinson Lodge Pole unit area described in Commission Order Number 6861.
So in essence, you're suggesting that the field boundaries for the pool remain the same?
That's correct.
Excluding the unit area.
Then if you would flip all the way to the last page, page number six, order number 14 recommends that we put in place basically the same type of system that Conoco employed voluntarily within the existing lodge pole unit, that upon the drilling of any new well within the lodge pole field outline, the well be allowed to produce unrestricted for 60 days. After that 60-day period, the well be issued an allowable of 200 barrels of oil per day for a period of 60 days. After that 60-day period passes, the rate would be restricted to 150 barrels of oil per day. And after that period of 60 days expires, the rate would be dropped to 100 barrels of oil per day per well. Immediately following the completion or recompletion of any well in the lodge pole pool, the operator shall file with the directory a completion report form 6. Within 30 days or a reasonable time thereafter, following the filing of a completion report, a hearing shall be docketed to have the operator show cause why the production restrictions imposed herein should not remain in place until such a time as a plan of unitization and secondary recovery operations for the reservoir is submitted and considered by the commission. Or in the alternative, if the operator does not feel that the newly discovered reservoir has the potential for secondary recovery, he can present that evidence to the commission and be under the commission's jurisdiction to find that there is no economical secondary recovery, and the allowables could be increased to whatever the director feels is proper for this new discovery.
Kevin, what's the reason for including a provision such as outlined in paragraph 14 that you've just discussed for us?
What Conoco recommends is that we should basically establish field rules within the Dickinson Lodge Pole field which make a requirement what Conoco has done voluntarily within the existing lodge pole unit. And I should point out that these restrictions are quite a bit more lax, I guess, or not as restrictive as what Conoco imposed within the Dickinson Lodge Pole unit. We had four producing wells in the field, and we voluntarily restricted production to 300 barrels a day for the entire field. We did that allocation based upon the net effective pay at each well, and the last well that Conoco drilled, the State A number 83, was issued an allowable of only 20 barrels of oil per day for its first 6 months of production. So what Conoco has recommended here is really no different and is actually a little bit less restrictive than what we did self-imposed under the Dickinson Lodge Pole unit wells.
Kevin, if the commission were to adopt the proposal as presented by Conoco today with respect to production restrictions, in your opinion, will that enhance the opportunity for the unitization of future lodge pole discoveries in this field?
Yes, I think it will. I think it'll give the operators of future wells incentive to work with one another and to try to get the field unitized for secondary recovery as soon as possible, because once that takes place, the restrictions, if the commission should find that the field does have secondary recovery potential, the restrictions would be lifted. Similar to what we're doing now, Conoco plans to lift our temporarily imposed restrictions a week from today and increase production in the field from 600 barrels a day to 2,000 barrels a day. That's a pretty good economic incentive for the operators to work with one another and to try to get the field developed and unitized as quickly as possible. And it will benefit both the royalty, the working interest owners, and the state of North Dakota by ensuring that reservoirs will not be depleted below the bubble point before secondary recovery operations can be imposed.
And by enhancing secondary recovery operations, it gives the opportunity for an operator to recover oil that would otherwise not be recovered, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that prevents waste?
Yes, it does.
And in your opinion, would it also protect relative rights?
Yes, it will.
And would it prevent the drilling of unnecessary wells?
Yes, it will.
That's all the questions I have for this witness. We would offer Exhibits 1 through 10.
Exhibits are received. Any questions?
I just have one comment. You know, if they get any smaller, maybe the commission would be better off spacing each individual one separately, depending upon the circumstances. If you turn to Exhibit 5, I'll give you an example. It may not make any difference on the economics of the well if, as an example, the same working interest owns both the northeast quarter and the northwest quarter of Section 5. However, from a mineral owner standpoint, if there's diverse ownership between the two quarters, someone's getting some oil they don't deserve if this information is correct. And that's the other side of the coin. With situations like this, it's almost impossible to get any accurate reasonableness to correlative rights, and you have to work with the information you have the best you know how. But have you explored the idea of spacing each individual one as they come about, if we have any more?
Well, I guess at the start, I disagree with your proposition that the development on 320 won't protect correlative rights. I think if you have a unit, that is the ultimate protection of correlative rights. If you remember the way the unitization formula reads in the Dickinson Lodgepole unit, a very large percent of the ownership within that field, both royalty and working interest owner, is based upon the remaining primary reserves and the original in place. And Conoco gave credit to everybody the remaining oil in place at the beginning of the project, not at the beginning of unitization. And so if you unitize the field early, before there is a large amount of oil produced from the reservoir, and if the unitization parameters are such that there's an equitable distribution of the interest between the royalty and the working interest owners, then that is the best way to protect correlative rights. I guess Conoco is much more concerned, given the competitive nature of these reservoirs and the high permeability. I think my testimony at the spacing hearing was that both the State 74 and the Cadmus 75 are capable of draining the entire 753 acres of reservoir in the Dickinson Lodgepole unit by themselves. So speaking purely on a primary recovery basis, one well per 640 would probably be the optimum spacing. The problem is, the second problem is, well, how do you can't define the geologic boundaries of the unit like this with one well per 640, so that's not a reasonable spacing. So I think a 320-acre spacing kind of balances those two concerns, one being the overdevelopment of the field resulting in competitive drainage between wells, and then it's kind of who's quickest, you know, who can get out there and drill their wells the fastest. And it also provides you, I think, the additional geologic information that you have to have in order to get the field unitized. And, you know, we were successful at doing that, I feel, in this field, and I think we can be successful doing that in the future.
The other side of that coin, though, is if they're any smaller, it becomes that much more complicated. And you still have inequities like the north half of 6. If it isn't done on a timely basis, if you have a little knife situation where it's only primary production. But we know from history that we had 4 wells penetrating the reservoir productively, and then we had a few other points that were dry, and we know how difficult it was to determine the boundaries of that reservoir from experience. So, you know.
Well, I think the commission has the provisions, you know, already in place. If an operator believes that they have to have an additional well to get the geologic evidence, they can make an application for a location exception or for increased density for that purpose. And, you know, we're not proposing any changes to that existing.
I was just throwing it out for exploratory purposes, whether we should consider each one individually or just have a blanket area.
I hadn't really considered that option, to be honest with you.
Thank you.
Like, for instance, you said that most of these wells are capable of draining in excess of 640 acres in this particular reservoir.
It's my opinion that almost every lodgepole reservoir that's discovered could be drained primary reserve-wise with one well bore, regardless of the geologic area that it encompasses. So if you accept my premise that what we've discovered here is a supergiant lodgepole mound, and that the typical lodgepole mound will be smaller than this, then in every case, a single well would drain the whole reservoir. But I don't know of any way to define a geologic reservoir for unitization with a single well bore. And I think it would also be difficult to water flood a field with a single well bore. I'm not sure there isn't a way to do it, but...
Well, if there were other reservoirs found that were, say, somewhat smaller than this, say, 640 acres in size, and they were spaced on 640 acres allowing multiple wells,
right,
would that not be a better way of spacing it?
I would agree. The problem you get into is what's the chances of all 640 acres being located in a single spacing unit? The chances are pretty small, and that's the problem that we confronted here. You know, if this whole reservoir would have been slid over into a single section, you know, Conoco might have made a different recommendation, but, you know, how do you protect correlative rights unless you have cross-sectional spacing? And it's my understanding there's no provision in North Dakota for cross-sectional spacing or for primary production units. It's kind of a difficult problem. And it's more difficult here because things can happen so quickly. You know, in most reservoirs in North Dakota, the permeabilities aren't such that you can drain this volume of oil in such a short period of time. So I guess it's always a problem, but here the problem is magnified because things happen so fast. A single well can produce 2,000 barrels of oil per day in a very small accumulation of oil, which is not that common.
Kevin, I had a couple of questions on your volumetric calculations and the parameters that you used to get those. Could you give me some of the parameters that you used, particularly like what you used for the porosity, what you used for the water saturation? Up with this?
Well, basically, I did a statistical analysis on all the parameters, both the thickness, the porosity, the aerial extent, the oil recovery factor. We've assumed that the oil properties will be similar to the ones that we've discovered in the existing lodgepole field. So if you turn to exhibit number 6, used an oil formation volume factor of discovery of 1.356 reservoir barrels per stock tank barrel, conate water saturation of 10.6%, and I think on this case I used a porosity of 4%. I'd have to go back, and I don't have that calculation in front of me, but I think that's correct. I think it was 4%, so if you back that out, I think you'll get the 3 million barrels of oil in place.
The 4% for the volumetric calculation?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Okay, and for the water saturation, you used the 10.6%?
Yes.
And that was from the core analysis?
That was from the special core analysis on the Cadrus number 75.
And that is a conate water saturation?
That's correct.
Which means actually in the core at the time there could have been more water in it than actually what this 10.6 represents.
No, it means at the time above the oil water contact you will have a conate water saturation of 10.6% in the oil column.
This being an irreducible water saturation.
That's correct.
Is what you're talking about.
That's correct.
Okay. But there could be more water in the reservoir or in that rock in this particular core than this 10.6%. This 10.6% represents the irreducible water saturation.
Above the oil water contact. Below the oil water contact, it will have more. That's correct. Above the oil water contact, you'll have 89.4% oil saturation. Below the oil water contact, there is, in our experience, a small transition zone in the field where the water saturation gradually increases from 10.6% to 100%. And that transition zone is very thin and is going to change from well to well based upon the capillary pressure profile. and then the majority of the reservoir below the oil water contact will have 100% water saturation. But in the oil column, the water saturation, the total water saturation will be 10.6%.
Okay, now, if my memory serves me right, on the core analysis, I think there was an effective porosity of around 3.1%. Is that correct?
Are you referring to the conventional core, the plug analysis?
The ones that were presented earlier to us. If I remember right, the effective porosity was around 3.1%.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me. I don't remember. Basically, it's very difficult to get a porosity in a vugular rock with a 1-inch plug sample, and that's what you have in the conventional core analysis. You know, if the sample you take happens to be in a vug, you're going to get 25% porosity. The sample you happen to get within the matrix, you're going to get a porosity that's close to zero. And so I wouldn't really rely too much on the porosity values taken from core analysis in a vugular limestone like the lodgepole. I think that the logs, the cross-plot porosity of the logs is a much more representative calculation of the porosity than anything you would ever be able to get from a core.
The cross-plot porosity from the logs is going to give you the total porosity, right?
That's correct.
Total porosity that you're seeing. And so if you've got a lot of vugs out there that aren't connected, then you're going to use that porosity in calculating your volumetrics, right?
Our interpretation is that all the vugs are connected with microfractures and other vugs. So I don't really think that there's a lot of secondary porosity out there that's not communicated. We don't have any evidence from our pressure test.
You think that all of the vugs in the core samples that have been cut are connected?
I think all of the bugs in the reservoir are connected predominantly through microfractures and through matrix porosity. And the reason I say that is we've done extensive pressure transient analysis in the field, and we have absolutely no evidence whatsoever that the reservoir is compartmentalized. And I think if it was, we would start to see individual layers within the reservoir depleting. We'd see variations in gas oil ratio. We would see variations in reservoir pressure between wells. Most recently, we perforated our two injection wells, the 83 and 79, which will serve as our water injection wells. We perforated them several feet below the oil water contact, and we did pressure tests in those wells to verify that they were in pressure communication. And all of the, even though we're perforating, 100 feet below where we've ever produced the wells, the reservoir pressure has depleted almost identical with the oil column. So I think the whole thing is connected top and bottom with a very high vertical permeability.
Kevin, I got a question on your provision for restricting production, and I'm not sure that this would apply in the Dickinson field area, but in a case where you have two spacing units right together and they're owned by different companies, and you have this restriction on production that you're proposing, wouldn't that in some cases almost be penalizing the first well that's being drilled? And in essence, it could almost not facilitate the drilling of that second well in a timely fashion. What I'm getting at, let's say that the first well was drilled and it was a real good well, but because of the restriction productions, it's down to 100 barrels a day until it gets unitized.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the lease then for the spacing unit next door really doesn't feel like it needs to drill its well too fast. It's not going to be in any hurry because it knows that this other well is just going to be restricted down to a very low rate. And if it's restricted to that very low rate, it's not going to be paid out, and I know companies are concerned about being paid out. So is that a real concern, or isn't that something that we're going to run into here?
I guess the only evidence I have to that is that Conoco drilled the State 83 in Section 5 and the Walton Number 84 in Section 6 after we had imposed our self-imposed rate restriction of 300 barrels a day. So we spent $1.2 million drilling two wells, and the 83 was put on at 20 barrels a day, and the 84 was a dry hole, but had it been a productive well, it also would have had an allocation of less than 50 barrels a day, probably. So I guess I can't speak for all operators, but speaking for Conoco, I don't think it's a disincentive for Conoco because the rate restriction is temporary. And I think we've got enough evidence on the lodgepole now, and I think the industry has enough evidence to know that if you get 100 foot of this stuff, it's a clean limestone, it's got 5% cross-plot porosity, regardless of what rate restriction is put on the well, you're going to know that it's going to be capable of producing rates much higher than that, because we're still, you know, doing something that the commission already has in place and allowing unrestricted production for the first 60 days. So the company will know what the wells are capable of producing. So I guess I don't think it provides a disincentive to Conoco. I guess I can't speak for anybody else, but we did have partners in both of those wells, or in one of those wells, and the partner participated, so.
But you don't think, as far as that situation, that hypothetical situation I just brought up, that that second well, you think, will still be drilled in a timely fashion?
I think it will.
Okay.
Any further questions? Any further ones?
Just a second. No further questions.
That concludes the hearing, case 5964, and it's the end of today's docket.